Welcome to Healthy Outcomes, brought to you by Baker Tilly, bringing you the latest trends and hottest topics in healthcare. Baker Tilly is a leading advisory, tax, and assurance firm dedicated to helping healthcare organizations explore ways in which they can win now and anticipate tomorrow. Let's go there.
Hi, my name is Mark Ross, and I am the leader of Baker Tilly's healthcare provider practice. Joining me for today's Healthy Outcomes podcast is Dr. Kate Goodrich. Kate is currently the Chief Medical Officer at Humana. During her career, Kate also served as the Chief Medical Officer at CMS and was also a Professor of Medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. As we were preparing for today's podcast, the one thing that was clearly evident to me was that Kate is passionate about improving the lives of seniors, specifically as it relates to their healthcare needs. And part of that evidence came as I was learning more about Kate, I learned that she publishes a quarterly newsletter that's focused on value-based care and senior-focused healthcare innovation. And that's primarily what our discussion is going to be about here today on the podcast, value-based care and senior-focused healthcare innovation, or what Kate's going to talk at great length about is senior-focused primary care. So with that introduction, Kate, welcome to the podcast and thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm so glad to be here, Mark. Thank you so much.
You bet. Well, let's start with the basics, Kate. And, you know, value-based care, I mean, my simple definition of value-based care is that providers get rewarded for helping their patients improve their outcomes, right? Based on, you know, you're getting paid for the value delivered to patients as opposed to the volume of patient services that a provider is delivering. I mean, that's my simplistic definition of value-based care. But from your perspective, can you give me your definition of value-based care and how it's different from traditional care models that we primarily see in the healthcare system today?
Well, I do think that you are right at its core about what value-based care is, but there's a lot to unpack there. So yes, it is aligning the financial incentives for clinicians with the quality and outcomes that their panel of patients experience. So that is true at its core. And it's about not only improving quality and outcomes, but doing so at a lower cost, because we know there's a lot of inefficiencies in our healthcare system. There's a lot of waste in our healthcare system, a lot of services that get delivered that don't really have much value. So it's really about improving the efficiency as well. But there's so much to unpack there, because value-based care has become a term that has kind of lost its meaning to a lot of people. And people kind of see in it what they want to see in many ways. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for that is that there's a lot of heterogeneity in how value-based care plays out. But I think at the end of the day, what we are learning is that when you can really very, very meaningfully, directly pay providers for the quality of care and outcomes that they provide, that actually that is better for patients and better for clinicians. And so it is something that we've been working on at Humana for a long time. It's an enormous part of our strategy. And actually, we've had a lot of success with it. Actually, 70% of our Medicare beneficiaries within Humana, our Medicare Advantage beneficiaries, are attributed to a value-based care provider. And we know from a lot of work we've done that there's actually better outcomes. So we're all in on it.
Sure. Sure. And you connected there, Kate, value-based care and Medicare Advantage. So how does value-based care support Medicare Advantage and vice versa?
Yeah, I think that the benefit of Medicare Advantage in being able to try new models and spread new models of care is that there's more flexibility within Medicare Advantage than there is within the fee-for-service system. Now, I don't want to say that within the regular fee-for-service system, there can't be value-based care. There is. And that is primarily through many of the models that the Innovation Center for CMS has launched. That's actually their purpose, is to test alternative payment models, which are typically value-based care models. But within Medicare Advantage, because of the way MA plans like us are paid, it allows for flexibility for us to test models of care with primary care physicians that we contract with. So Medicare Advantage is paid by CMS on a risk-adjusted per member per month basis. So think of it as a capitated payment that Humana gets to manage the care of our Medicare Advantage beneficiaries. Because it's a capitated amount, we have to be able to manage the care within that amount. So we also have to be more efficient. And we then translate that in our work with our network providers, where with many of them, particularly in primary care, we also could pay them a risk-adjusted capitated payment to manage the care of their patients, of their Humana patients, efficiently. And we tie that payment very closely to improvement on quality measures and outcomes. So Medicare Advantage really does support these models of care, I think, pretty strongly.
Sure. Sure. And Kate, you mentioned that 70%, if I heard you correctly, that 70% of Humana's, I guess, Medicare Advantage population or subscribers are connected to value-based care providers. If I got that right, how does that compare to, say, other insurers?
Well, I think we're pretty much leading in our industry. We don't know the exact numbers of, for example, our competitors, but we do know that there is more value-based care within Medicare Advantage right now than there is with other systems, including the fee-for-service system. But we've really been a leader in this space. But I will say other Medicare Advantage payers, whether it be, you know, United Healthcare, Aetna, et cetera, they are also focused on increasing their value-based care arrangements as well. So it's definitely something that has been spreading for some time.
Sure. And when we go back, and one of my retired partners, Kate, David Gregory, and I used to joke around a lot about value-based care. Not really, I shouldn't joke around about it, but talk about it a lot, in that we've been talking about value-based care for a few decades now. And it just doesn't seem like it's really taken hold the way that maybe, you know, CMS and others expected it to many, many years ago when value-based care was first introduced. But it does appear now to be getting some legs. And I think that's evident by that 70% number that you just shared with me.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I have to give CMS credit. They have, you know, done quite a bit. They've learned a lot over the years as to what works for alternative payment models or value-based care. And they have a very ambitious goal of getting 100% of Medicare beneficiaries attributed to a value-based care physician, or they call it accountable care, by the year 2030. And they're making some really, really good progress. So I do think it is spreading. I do think there's a perception that it, quote, hasn't worked, but I would disagree with that. I think that we are seeing increasingly more and more advanced primary care under these value-based care models. And while there have been some challenges with that, I do think that it's just a win for patients. And frankly, it's a win for doctors and nurses. It's a win for clinicians. So I think it will continue to spread, but we have to ensure that the system is set up to support that.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, some of the, and again, this is just something that I've read over the years, Kate, just to close out our value-based care discussion here, but some of the benefits, certainly, you know, for patients, better outcomes, but for providers, I mean, generally they're seeing higher patient satisfaction. And from a, I mean, I'm not a healthcare provider, but I have to imagine that feels pretty good to a healthcare provider when their patients are more satisfied with the care they're receiving.
I think that's right. And I think maybe if I compare and contrast a little bit the differences between regular primary care, like traditional primary care, and especially full risk value-based care, clinical care delivery, that'll bring to life for your listeners what the differences are, not just for patients, but yes, also for clinicians. So for example, in value-based care, often the physician has smaller patient panel sizes. That means they have a total number of patients that they're responsible for that is much smaller. Whereas in traditional primary care, physicians often have panel sizes of 2,000 or 2,500, and it might be 500 or 700 in value-based care. So they have fewer patients overall. They also have longer amount of time with their patients in value-based care. So for example, in our senior-focused primary care clinics, our physicians have up to 40 minutes with each patient. And probably the last time most of your listeners went to their primary care doctor, they spent, you know, 10 to 15, maybe 20 minutes if they're lucky with their primary care physician. And the physicians in value-based care are directly compensated for the right things, for doing the right things, for really focusing on closing gaps in care, ensuring their patients get their preventive screening or their vaccinations, managing chronic disease effectively and efficiently. They're directly incentivized to do those things. Whereas in fee-for-service, you know, frankly, people are incentivized for doing more and seeing more patients. And that's just very dispiriting for a physician to really always be on that hamster wheel of just having to see more and more patients and not be able to spend the time with them that you need. So as you can see, clinicians who are in value-based care often do have a much better, more satisfying professional experience because they're able to deliver that higher quality care. Now, having said all of that, there definitely is still a lot to learn on how to optimize all of those care delivery models. And there still are challenges, you know, day to day for sure, but it is overall a more satisfying experience.
Sure. So you gave us a little background there, Kate, on, again, senior-focused primary care being a version of value-based care. And when we say senior-focused, Kate, that's primary patients 65 plus, right? Is that that's the age we're talking about here?
That's right.
So you talked about how that model of care is certainly different than regular fee-for-service primary care. Are there some examples of a few brands out there, Kate, that have implemented senior-focused primary care in the system today? And how are they doing? How are they performing?
Yeah. So the first brand I'll talk about, of course, is ours at Humana, which is our CenterWell-branded senior-focused primary care clinics. We are located really nationally, but have a pretty heavy presence, particularly in the Southeast and Southwest, but also some in the Midwest and coming up to the Mid-Atlantic even. So we're very proud of that. And these are clinics that are, again, directly focused on patients who are 65 and older. Other brands you may have heard of are ChinMed and Oak Street. Oak Street is now owned by CVS. Iora Healthcare. There's a number of others out there, but those are some of the name brands that people know. I will also say for CenterWell, a number of our clinics in Texas and Florida in particular are branded as Conviva. Those are clinics that have actually been around quite a while, but they're part of the CenterWell brand.
Okay, great. So because this is such a branded initiative under Humana, I would imagine that, well, I wouldn't even imagine that. I think rigorous, you know, peer-reviewed research, Kate, is critical likely for validating the effectiveness and value of care models like senior-focused primary care. And as we are preparing for this podcast, you made me aware that Humana Healthcare Research, in partnership with Harvard University, recently published a study on this very topic, the value of senior-focused primary care. So a couple questions here, Kate. Well, you know, why did Humana invest in this type of study and what were the results?
Yeah. So we've done a lot of work in Humana Healthcare Research looking at the difference in quality and health outcomes like hospitalizations and rehospitalizations for patients who are part of MA, Medicare Advantage, versus patients who are in fee-for-service. And we found in general, and we're not the only researchers that have found this, but we have also found that in general, outcomes and quality measures are better in MA. And then we looked within MA to see, okay, is there a difference in outcomes for patients who are MA patients, but they are see physicians paid under fee-for-service versus those that are in different types of value-based care arrangements? And we found that, in fact, patients who see doctors who are in the most mature value-based care arrangements, which I would say is what we call global risk or some amount of downside risk, actually have better outcomes. And then we said, okay, well, even within that, we know that there are some downside risk value-based care providers who focus only on seniors, like CenterWell, right? Like ChinMed and Oak Street and others. And we were curious about whether or not that particular care delivery model, so not just the financial model of downside risk, but the fact that these clinics orient themselves to be squarely focused on the needs of seniors, which are in fact unique, right? Seniors have not only multiple chronic conditions often, but they sometimes have functional decline and cognitive decline, and they have social needs. And so these clinics tend to really focus on all of those things, not just on a sort of disease by disease basis, right? And so we wanted to understand, is there something different about that clinical model of care delivery that has a differential impact on our seniors' outcomes compared to even other value-based care providers, as well as fee-for-service providers? And because we were very invested in CenterWell and big part of Humana's strategy is to grow our primary care business, we thought, well, let's see what we can find. And we knew that partnering with an academic partner would really help, you know, strengthen the methodology, help us think through what are the, you know, sort of best statistical methods to use, but also, you know, help us sort of design the study and think through how we might interpret the results even better. And we partner with academics actually quite a bit in our research. And I will say, you know, what we did was we looked at about 462,000 Humana members. They're all over 65 years old. And we looked at a number of outcomes. We looked at quality measures like breast cancer screening, colon cancer screening, control of blood pressure, control of diabetes. And we looked at outcomes like hospitalizations, emergency department visits, the number of primary care visits, readmissions, those kind of things. And we looked at that comparing patients who are in senior-focused primary care, Humana patients in senior-focused primary care, CenterWell, Oak Street, ChenMed, all of those, because we, our insurance business contracts with the other senior-focused primary care clinics in addition to CenterWell, and then compared that to patients who were in other value-based care arrangements with other physicians that Humana contracts with, and of course, patients who see physicians that Humana contracts with that are in fee-for-service. And we compared the outcomes across all of those. And what we found was that compared to traditional primary care models, that patients that are in senior-focused primary care experience 17% more primary care visits. And the reason that's important is because there have been a number of studies that have shown more primary care is better, particularly for seniors. And when I say better, the more primary care people get, the better their quality of care is and the better their health outcomes. We also saw there were about 6% fewer hospitalizations, 11% fewer emergency department visits, and they were 10% less likely to experience 30-day inpatient readmissions. And they also did better on hypertension control, diabetes control, and then the cancer screenings. So those are all amazing results. But what was even more amazing was that we found that there was actually a disproportionately better impact on Black patients and low-income patients compared to white patients or patients of average income. So we found that, for example, for Black patients who saw senior-focused primary care docs, that they had 39% more primary care visits, and there were 21% more primary care visits for low-income beneficiaries. There were also significantly fewer emergency department visits, hospitalizations, and readmissions. So it seems that the impact of the senior-focused primary care delivery model has a disproportionate impact on the historically disadvantaged populations.
Wow, that was a mouthful, Kate.
It was. I probably went on too long, but it's
no, you did. Really no, not at all. No. It was a study that was done. There was a lot to unpack there, as you said earlier. Uh-huh. And so the theories behind why the model, I guess, worked. You mentioned earlier these senior focused primary care physicians have smaller patient panels, or spending more time with their patients. But beyond those two things, I mean, why is it working so well? And my next question there, Kate, is, you know, the healthcare system in our country has been criticized for many, many, many years. I mean, the cost of healthcare in this country is significant, et cetera. And so this seems like it makes so much sense, Kate.
Yeah.
Right? Why don't we have more of it?
Yeah. Well, let me take the first question, like what's driving these differences? I do want to say that this study did not elucidate the causes. This is a correlational study. It was a cross-sectional retrospective study. That just means we looked, retrospectively at these outcomes, but, you know, strong correlation, but we can't say causation. But we do, of course, have some theories.
Sure.
So I think one of the most important things to know is that for CenterWell, but this is also true for many of the other senior-focused primary care organizations, is they locate their clinics in areas of the country that are historically disadvantaged. So our clinics tend to be located, for example, where there's primary care deserts, right? Where people just don't have access to primary care. And we also try to locate our clinics like in a strip mall where people shop and grocery shop and have other business so that it's easy for them to access. So I think that's a really important part of it. The access is really helpful. Number two, I think because of the way the payment system works with this sort of capitated payment that I mentioned, or downside risk payment, that allows for our practices to invest in certain things that regular primary care practices often just don't have the capital to invest in. So I'll give you a couple of examples. One is data. So being able to have data, but also analytic insights into the health of your patient population, understanding with specificity which patients haven't gotten their screening, that you need to get them in for screening, which patients don't have good diabetes or blood pressure control so that you can address that right away. And having those analytic insights kind of served up to the clinician in an easy to understand manner so that they can address those gaps in care right there at the point of care. So I would say analytics are a really important part of it. And then the other way in which these clinics make investments is in having the right type of resources and personnel right there in the clinic to be able to address holistically patients' needs. So for example, in our CenterWell clinics, we have behavioral health specialists, we have social workers, we have nurse practitioners that are care coaches that work with patients on management of their chronic disease or on their transition from hospital to home to try to avoid a readmission. A lot of times our patients come into the clinic to see the social worker. They may not be coming to see the doctor. So it's really that true care team approach that is quarterbacked by the physician that we've always heard about and know we should have, but that actually plays out in real practice here. So those are at least some of the things that we think really do make the difference, although we are always trying to continuously improve. And then Mark, you asked, why is it that this isn't just everywhere? Because the outcomes seem to be so good. Well, first of all, I will say, I do think that studies like ours are really helpful to help us understand what's working. But like anything else in medicine or health services research, we hope that down the road that somebody does try to replicate our findings. So there is more research that really should be done to further tease out these findings and hopefully replicate these findings and tease out what are the causal elements. But what I would say is, you know, again, in this model of value-based care, there's a financial model, which is the capitated global risk model, or at least downside risk model, that supports the clinical model. And in order to make the kinds of changes that we've made and that others have made that are so different from traditional primary care, you have to think of this as really clinical care delivery transformation. And I can't emphasize that word transformation enough. This is not just tweaking a regular primary care clinic at the edges. This is completely changing the way in which care is delivered, everything from, you know, the architectural layout and the type of furniture that you buy for the clinics that are friendly for seniors to the workflows that you have, to the availability of data and all of those other resources. All of that requires resources. That requires upfront capital. And that's just not something that primary care practices have at their fingertips. So making these changes is really, really hard. And so I think we will be seeing more of this over time. The Innovation Center at CMS has launched some models that provide those upfront payments so that primary care clinics can make those upfront investments in order to transform how care is delivered. I know there's also some consideration of legislation to change the primary care payment system in order to allow for what we call these population-based payments, which is really those upfront payments I'm talking about, as part of the way that clinicians are paid. Because there's just a recognition, if we're going to ask physicians to do something different, we have to pay them differently so that they can do it.
Sure. Just a follow-up question there as you were talking. My brain was working here a bit. And so this is senior-focused primary care. We talked 65-plus, and, and certainly the 65-plus is, there's a lot more spend there, right, for seniors, healthcare spend overall, than younger populations. And so not to throw you a curveball here, but has, you know, what about the 45 to 65 age cohort or other age groups, you know, a more focused primary care model, something, you know, similar to what you're describing here for the senior-focused primary care, I would imagine that would work well too.
Yeah, I think this is a great model of care for everybody. I mean, everybody wants more time with their doctors. Doctors want more time with their patients. I mean, I think, honestly, I also think part of the secret sauce is that time that they have, right? Because then they can get to know their patient really well. And frankly, what we found is that primary care physicians find that because they have more time, not only do they get to know their patients really well, but they can actually do a lot of the workup of their patient themselves, as opposed to referring out to specialists. I mean, sometimes you have to refer to a specialist, of course. But a lot of times, because primary care docs don't have enough time, they just refer to specialists for things that really we're all trained as internists to work up ourselves, but they just don't have the time to do it. So they make referrals. Well, you see less of that with this type of care delivery model. And that really ought to be true for the commercial population as well. I think there is some, my understanding, we don't really have a commercial line of business anymore at Humana, but I know other payers, some are experimenting with this, some as well in the commercial line of business. I think the model probably would look a little bit different only because the needs of those patients are somewhat different. But I would say value-based care has not penetrated commercial lines of business as much, But I think there's definitely, it's hard to argue that it wouldn't be incredibly valuable from both a quality and cost perspective for people who are under age 65 as well. So we are starting to see some of that.
Sure. And the one thing I really appreciated about what you talked about, the care delivery model and the other resources that are in the physician's office, that, you know, the care team, if you will, and that, mm-hmm. that team approach, having other resources there to provide that overall care that any patient needs, as opposed to just walking into a physician's office and having just the primary care physician there to converse with and deal with. So certainly an interesting team approach there. So Kate, we all know, so this is, I guess one of my follow-up questions was going to be on recruiting these primary care physicians to participate in a senior-focused primary care model. But before I ask that question, or part of asking that, mm-hmm. you know, we know there's a significant primary care shortage in this country, burnout very high among physicians across the country. So what's the impact of, again, senior-focused primary care model on physicians, given it's such a different model of care? And how are you successfully recruiting these physicians into this platform?
Well, that is a wonderful question, because from everything I've said already about this model of care, it does stand to reason, and I've seen this myself, that this would be a much better experience for clinicians. And that is generally true, for sure. They have more time with their patients, which is what they want. They have more time to think and to work things up and have that professional satisfaction of having actually worked up and treated a patient themselves. So it is very important, as we are opening new clinics and recruiting clinicians into those clinics to see our members. And by the way, CenterWell is payer agnostic. So we actually see Humana members, but also patients who have other insurance as well. It's really important to ensure that the values of CenterWell, I'm just going to use CenterWell as the example, are really aligned with the clinician in front of you that you're interviewing. So you have to be sure you have clinicians who genuinely want to, you know, focus on improving quality and lowering cost and are very committed to that way of working. And you think all physicians are, and I do think all physicians are. But I think the other thing is, if you are a physician who has been in fee-for-service for your career so far, that change into value-based care, particularly the way we do it, is actually a really big change. And we found that it's important to have people who are resilient to change and are mission aligned, but also embrace learning new things. Because not only do they have to sort of get out of the mindset of having to constantly focus on seeing more in order to earn more revenue, but there are things you actually do a little bit differently in these kinds of clinics. So you have to be able to, for example, code accurately for your patient's diagnoses, which is actually not something you're incentivized to do in regular fee-for-service. It's also true coming into this, when you have more time with your patients and the expectation is that you as the primary care doctor are really doing most of that workup and only referring when absolutely necessary, sometimes you have to relearn some medicine. And on the one hand, that is really professionally satisfying for most physicians. When I've talked to our physicians in CenterWell who have been in fee-for-service before coming over, at first, you know, I think the reaction is, wow, I was trained in all this and yet I've kind of, you know, I haven't really used it as much, so I've kind of lost it. Now I've got to relearn some of these things, like how to work up, you know, more complex conditions. And so again, that's having some of that capability of making some of those changes and that sort of resilience to change. And so we do look for that in physicians that we recruit as well. And then, of course, we also expect our physicians to be the quarterback of the team. And while I think ever since I've been in medicine, we've talked about team-based care, and we say we're practicing team-based care because you have a bunch of different professionals with different skills all in the same building, but you're not really practicing team-based care often in fee-for-service, whereas that is genuinely the way medicine is practiced within these clinics, with the physician leading a team. And so that is also a skill that some physicians have to learn. And so we do try to recruit people who are excited about those changes and that we think will be successful in making those changes. The last thing I'll tell you, and I should have said this before, is that we know from our own internal data at Humana, not just with senior-focused primary care, but with value-based care in general, that physicians who are in value-based care arrangements actually make more money than physicians who are in fee-for-service, particularly as their practice matures and they get better and better at improving quality and holding down costs, like keeping people out of the hospital making specialty referrals only when necessary, using lower cost drugs, for example, that because of those savings that can be generated from that better primary care, that allows the physician to actually take home more pay. So that's something we've pretty consistently found as well.
Sure. So I would imagine that based on what you said there, Kate, maybe the most significant challenge, if you will, for physicians then jumping into this sort of model would be developing those new skills and just learning how to practice differently.
That's right. And we spend a lot, because we're investing in these physicians. We have a whole program that we, when we have a new physician come in, they go through actually quite a bit of training, and they have other physicians in the clinic with them who probably are, who are more seasoned and experienced with value-based care, who are able to, you know, work with them to help them build their skills. So it, we have a very intentional effort to ensure that our physicians are successful by ensuring that they build the skills that they need.
Fantastic. Well, Kate, our time here has just flown by. Incredibly interesting discussion that we've had. And I just want to make reference to something I said earlier, that in the U.S., as we all know, and it's been this way for years, and it's not going to change likely anytime soon, we do have the highest health spending based on GDP, right, as a percentage of GDP, among all developed countries across the world. But in talking to you, Kate, this sort of model gives me some hope that we will continue to make progress, or we will make progress as it relates to our healthcare spend in this country. You mentioned the study, 11% fewer ED visits, 6% fewer hospitalizations, 10% less likely to experience 30-day hospital, you know, inpatient readmissions. I mean, that's going to reduce health spend in this country. So it certainly gives me some hope.
Yeah.
How about you?
I agree. I mean, that decreased, you know, acute care utilization saves money. And I do think it's important to say that there also is, you know, there has to be sort of those upfront investments as well. You have to,
yes,
you do have to spend some capital to set up this type of practice. There's no question about that. But frankly, I think we should be spending our healthcare dollar much more in primary care than we should be in hospital care. And even, I mean, I don't want to, you know, sound like specialty care is bad, because it's not. It's very necessary much of the time. But there's so much that can be dealt with in primary care. And, you know, right now in our country, Mark, less than 5% of healthcare spending goes towards primary care, which is just, I think, a devastating number. So that really does need to change. And I think we now have some advanced primary care models that we know work. And that's where we really need to be focused.
Sure. So Kate, beyond that, beyond some of those points you just made, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners? Anything you hope our listeners walk away with from today's conversation?
I think just walking away with an understanding that there kind of is that hope, that there is a model of care that is genuinely delivering better quality and outcomes for people. Because I think it's easy to have lost faith in our healthcare system that we have the ability to do that. And I think, you know, after, you know, years of talking about value-based care, which, you know, is probably actually a 40 or 50 year journey, you know, we're probably halfway there, but there is hope. And that means that we need to be investing in exactly this kind of care. So I hope if there's any listeners out there who are policymakers or influencers in this area, you read our study and really advocate for investing in primary care in this way.
Fantastic. Great summary there, Kate. So I want to thank you so much for joining me on today's podcast. It was an enlightening discussion, certainly for me, and I'm sure for our listeners. And I also want to thank our listeners for joining this podcast. If you found this episode useful and would like to listen to more episodes about hot topics in the healthcare industry, please subscribe to our Healthy Outcomes podcast or learn more by visiting us at bakertilly.com. Kate, thank you again.
Thank you so much.